Now, get ready to spend the next 2 hours with our three sports-loving ladies. Mia O'Brien, Lauren Brooks, and Taylor Dahl.
This is Helmets and Heels
on 1010XL, switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor. Show me what you got, pretty lady.
We say hello to everyone on this fine Tuesday in Duval and throughout the country and the world, everyone listening everywhere. But Mia, I have to tell you, I thought of you this morning when I saw the news about Zay Jones being released. Look, there have been, I think, a lot of people who said this will not be surprising. There have been other people who said, I think Zay Jones will be on this team. I was on the side of, I think he'll be on this team for depth purposes, but I understand the first group of people that thought saving money makes sense and he's not going to be a starting receiver. But certainly you had a really good connection with Zay throughout his past few seasons here, and so I thought of you this morning when I saw he was released.
Yeah, I haven't had the chance to reach out to Zay or his camp yet, just because, as you probably, if you're tuning in on YouTube, can see, over the last few hours, we've had some snafus in the technical department, and of course, trying to bring you as much content as we can and coverage regarding the release of Zay Jones by the Jaguars this morning. But yes, I was in the camp, Lauren, of knowing, I don't want to say how hurt, because that sounds like immature, but knowing how hurt Trent Baalke and the coaching staff and the front office were by the battle of attrition in the on the injury front this past season, I fully expected them to keep Zay Jones around, even if he became the fourth most expensive wide receiver in the number four wide receiver in the National Football League.
You can say affected, how affected they were.
Yeah, they were extremely affected by it. It's the reason that they're holding on to Cam Robinson. They're holding on to everyone they possibly can, just because of what they saw down the stretch when it came to their depth being questioned. And so I truly believe that they would keep Zay around. They did go out, and of their 13 undrafted free agents that they signed of their rookie class, five of them are wide receivers. And so clearly there was an emphasis to look at what else is out there. We know they carried seven wide receivers a year ago. And so you subtract Zay, you subtract Calvin Ridley, you add Gabe Davis. Well, now you're at six, which is what most teams traditionally carry. Oh, and you added Devin Duvernay too, minus Jamal Agnew.
Right.
So that's six. And so the math makes sense. It's a $4 million savings for the Jaguars. And depending on if it's a post-June 1 cut or not, that could also affect the bottom line. I would assume it'll be a post-June 1.
Yeah,
I would assume it'll be a post-June 1 cut, in which case they will save even more money. But certainly, you know, it's sad because this is a guy, and I understand that there have been those who've run the numbers and said that his stats in 2022 were inflated solely because of how many catches he had, how many opportunities, how many targets he had, and that inflated his stats to what he actually has been throughout his career. But look, you look at that opener when he was healthy, the diving catch against the Indianapolis Colts, when in Buffalo he guts it out with the injury that he had suffered 3 weeks earlier against the Kansas City Chiefs, tries to play in that game that game in London, and has a touchdown in the back of the end zone, gets hurt again. You can't fault the guy that it just was an absolute slog of a season because of injury after injury. And we still don't know if the first injury was related to the second injury. I know Justin Lewis of the Florida Times Union did that great piece where it revealed exactly what was wrong with Zay. But it's unfortunate. But again, I just go back to, I felt like this front office and coaching staff were just so affected by the depth being tested that they would do everything in their power to keep everybody, as many bodies as possible who have played in significant football games that matter.
And Taylor, we saw Zay Jones, not that Calvin Ridley's still here, so he wouldn't have to keep lining him up, but because he knew the offense so well, he was certainly a key piece as far as vocally for those, especially the receivers, but I think the offense overall.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, there were moments early in the season before, obviously, Christian Kirk went down where we felt the games were different when Zay was in and when he wasn't in, because there were number one, you have that other weapon, and Zay was one of those guys too who was getting those toe tap right on the sideline type of catches, and that's the type of receiver he was. And it's interesting to me that maybe some people say it was inflated because the amount of targets and the amount of receptions, like, you would think that's what you want, because the moment that you have a guy who can have 82 receptions, that opens up opportunities for other people. And there was just kind of like that safety feeling around Zay when Zay was on the field when it came to between him and Trevor. Unfortunately, I feel like maybe some of this is the injuries last year, because it was so, you know, missed a few games early, then came back, then missed a chunk of games again, and then came back, and then missed some more games. So it wasn't like maybe I feel like maybe the concern was in more of in that realm of, hey, you know, unfortunately, you weren't on the field very much last season. And in 2022, when you were very valuable, but you can't be that valuable if you're not there. So I think they probably want to look at that just because of how hindered they were down the stretch when it came to offensively, and because of all the weapons going out. It is still interesting to me. Yes, you save some money, but to bring in, you know, you have a ton of the five guys that they got, the undrafted guys that are all wide receivers, but you had this one who already has, knows your playbook, knows your offensive play caller, knows your quarterback. So to me, that's why I more so lean, maybe it's injuries kind of leading to this situation.
The numbers, by the way, since I know we all wanted to run through them, so let's do so. The Jaguars take on a $6.5 million dead cap number and would save $4 million if it is not a post-June 1 designated cap cut. If it is designated post-June 1 cut, they would carry $3 million, $3.017, we'll just call it three, in dead cap in 2022 and would save $7.7 million, which is clearly significant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense. But at the end of the day, the Jaguars, once they drafted Brian Thomas Jr., in their minds, were set at the wide receiver position. I think, like you said, maybe an undrafted free agent will compete for that position. But they believe they now have the room the way they want it. And
yeah.
So, yes, when Gabe Davis was added, we still thought Zay Jones would be here. When Calvin Ridley, we thought was
like, just put them all downfield and someone will get
there. Yeah, exactly. Right? I mean, give Trevor a little bit of protection and then just air it out. Let's just become that kind of air raid offense here, like Texas Tech. But at the end of the day, I think this is significant to show how much faith the Jaguars have in Brian Thomas Jr.,
yeah,
a rookie who is stepping in, and a lot is going to be placed on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know it'll be interesting as we go to practices and then certainly training camp to specifically watch him and his route running.
And I think what's going to be most fascinating is, I know Hayes Carlion released his way too early 53-man roster on 1010XL.com. You should go check that out if you have time. And he said that he believed the Jaguars would cut Parker Washington in favor of Elijah Cooks. And I've seen plenty of way too early 53s that have both guys getting cut, Cooks getting cut over Parker Washington. And it's fascinating because one of them they spent a 6th-round pick on, and you can throw it away and say it's a day 3 pick, who cares? And the other one, they did everything in their power to hide him as a former undrafted free agent rookie last year to make sure he got to the 53, to make sure that he wasn't subject to waiver claims. And now you're just going to move on from them, which, hey, listen, if these five undrafted free agent wide receiver rookies ball out in the preseason,
mm-hmm,
if Jarvis Landry, who, yes, has a tryout with the Jaguars, a rookie minicamp, looks like the Jarvis Landry of old, maybe that changes your plans a little bit. But I think that this move was also made knowing that Zay Jones is 29 years old, knowing they have those two guys in-house. And while, yes, there were questions about the onboarding process and how prepared those two players were for the moment when they were thrown into the fire, I do think that you can't completely say we're done with them. We're moving on from the two of them.
Yeah, one of the things that, and this actually went back when we were having the conversations about Brandon Ayuk here, and I was, you know, reading all of the stuff on Ayuk, and he was one of the ones that they talk about is the, when it comes to beating opposing coverages and getting open, had one of the highest target rates. Zay Jones was higher than Brandon Ayuk when it came to being one of the better guys of getting open. His open target percentage was the 5th best in the league. Around Cooper Kupp, Jerry Jeudy, Brandon Ayuk, and Keenan Allen were all kind of like in this phase, and Tyler Lockett sitting at the very top of that, which makes sense for a lot of people. But I think it's interesting because I read also that they did try to trade Zay and no one was open to making that deal. I think that if this was after 2022, it would have been a little bit different. But again, going back to injuries, people were probably looking at that and being like, you kind of missed half the season. And so I'm not sure that's worth a trade right now.
And if the Jaguars traded him after that 2022 season, people would be
like, what are you doing?
Right, because he was such a go-to guy for Trevor Lawrence. They also released kicker Joey Sly, and I don't think that anyone's all that surprised.
No.
The beefy, muscular kicker is no more here in Jacksonville.
A thicker kicker.
Yeah.
Thicker
See,
kicker.
That's what I call Meavis. is the thicker kicker. So, yeah. And I've called Style that, but I'm like, I don't know. I can't have two thicker kickers.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I did tweet because I saw a couple of our friends, our Heligans on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures, noted yesterday when we had our discussion about Cam Little, the Jaguars' sixth-round pick at 212th overall. Future kicker is the hope that, you know, you couldn't help but sit there. And I know I tweeted it out in the media room that Trent Baalke had the opportunity to do the right thing, which was to draft a kicker, because we've been on this carousel since Josh Lambeau got hurt in 2020, and I want off of it. We need some consistency.
Yeah.
Or he had the opportunity to do the funniest thing ever, which was to select Harrison Meavis after his brother notoriously had a field goal that went awry and hit Coach Campo at training camp in 2022. So, yeah, that would have been funny, though, to have both thicker kickers on the roster. But yeah. I think Trent did the right thing. Good job, yeah. Trent.
Those are the good old days at Episcopal High School for training camp, back when the Miller Electric Center was being built. By the way, I mentioned Brian Thomas Jr. We will talk to Matt Moscona from ESPN Baton Rouge coming up in a little bit at 12:30 to talk all about the three LSU players. And also, I think, Matt House and Ryan Nielsen and all the things that have connected Baton Rouge and LSU to here in Jacksonville. But I think there's a lot of expectation and pressure on Cam Little. And mm-hmm. if there's anyone who can handle it, it's certainly we expect it to be him. But he now is competing with Riley Patterson, who has been here, mm-hmm. who has made kicks in big games for the Jaguars, who is super familiar with the other specialists, and enter Cam Little. And are we going to spend an entire show talking about the kicker? No. But that position is really important. We yeah. talked to Josh Scobie, Taylor, when mm-hmm. he was out of town a couple weeks ago, and when he scored all the points for this yeah. team in 9-0 type victories, like, yeah. you realize how important a kicker is.
Yeah. And that conversation was funny, Mia, because he was, number one, just saying how he was like, there were games where literally I scored every single point. And multiple games where that was the case. But then he also talked about, because I was asking him and I was like, what is your mindset when you're waiting? Like, do you start getting frustrated if they're not scoring points? And he was like, no, you almost have to have the mindset of not wanting them to score, because if you just think they're going to score a touchdown and you're just chilling on the sideline, he's like, in your mind, you have to be like, I'm going to need to make a 55-yard field goal. So get your ready for that. And he was like, because there were moments I wasn't, and I was cheering for this team to score. And the next thing you know, they're like, all right, you got to go kick another field goal. He's like, oh God,
I'm not ready. I wasn't kicking in that little net on the sideline.
Here's the thing, though, and I'm glad you brought Josh up. I mean, he's the last kicker that the Jaguars have drafted. Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, he is the last kicker. They took a punter. Yes, a weapon. Yeah. That's the story for another time.
He's still in the NFL.
Yes, he is still in the NFL. And that's where I'm looking at the list right now of all of the kickers who have been drafted all time. And when you look at the names, certainly there's been a couple who have faltered, have not panned out. Sorry, Florida State fans. Robert Aguayo. Right. That's the
rough one.
That's the most notorious. And some of them who are still in the league, i.e. Daniel Carlson, who mm-hmm. flamed out with the Vikings, now has been extremely profitable with the Las Vegas Raiders. And so mm-hmm. some of them Some of them, they need to get to that second landing spot before it pans out for them. But as I look at this list of names, I mean, let me just rattle a couple off for you. In the last 8 years, Jake Moody, 49ers, mm-hmm. played in a Super Bowl, not too shabby. Cade York for the Browns, who was very successful at Louisiana State. Evan McPherson, we all know about, the former Gator.
Our best position potentially in the NFL.
Tyler Bass with the Bills has been their long-term answer. Mm-hmm. Matt Gay with the Bucks didn't work out, but he's found some other spots that he succeeded in. I mentioned Carlson. Jake Elliott did not pan out with the Bengals, eventually landed with the Philadelphia Eagles. And so, yes, there is certainly some of these kickers that then latch on to that second landing spot.
Harrison Butker
was the next name. Yeah. I mean, he's a long-term solution. And so that's why, like,
Dustin Hopkins, even, who is now on his third or fourth team.
Correct. But then you go, I mean, look, like, there is an argument to be made. Like, Nick Folk was drafted by the Cowboys. We know that he never really worked with the Cowboys. He worked with another team up north. Steven Goskowski, though, it did work out for the Patriots. And so that's where I just look at this, though, and the hit rate is a lot. It's a lot better than you think.
Yeah.
I've seen so many of you who say the value just isn't there to draft a kicker. Mm-hmm. But when you're picking from that top two or three in a good kicker draft, you have to throw the dart, especially when it's a late round pick, because the odds of them hitting versus an undrafted free agent who's going to hit Coach Campo, like, that unfortunately is larger. It's just the nature of the numbers.
He was not hurt in the making of that.
No, Coach Campo was A-okay. He's probably going to text me right now and have a laughing emoji coming my way.
Well, it is, and going back to Lauren's point of kind of the pressure that is on Little too, because you mentioned, you know, he's competing with Riley Patterson, and then he's familiar with this, with the Jaguars and with Jacksonville and all of that. And so in addition to that, he knows too, and I think kickers know, okay, if you're spending a draft pick on a kicker, most people are like, you better be good. And so I'm sure that, I'm not saying it's probably overwhelming him in a feeling, but there is probably a little bit of that for him. Like, they used one of their draft picks, and I got to hear my name called on draft day, so let me be that guy for them.
And not the last guy drafted either.
Yeah, yes, you had another one after that. So, and when you go back to when you're talking about kickers and when we're talking about that hit rate, yes, there's been misses, but the one thing that I think you can't deny when it comes to this position is when you do find that one and you draft that one, you're set for a decade.
Right. If you hit, plus, if it hits, then you're good.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you rather just throw the dart and see? Who else were you going to draft in the sixth round? I'm not even going to open that up to the text line, Design for Lifetime Enclosures, because I'm sure there's plenty of names that y'all are thinking about.
Yeah. And I think we made this point kind of yesterday, is people, their subjective way of thinking about these players in the draft. And so what Taylor thinks is going to be different than what I think, which is going to be different than what you think. And also, it depends on which college football team or conference you watch the most. Like, Mia obviously is going to have more of a familiarity with Big Ten, and Taylor watches Notre Dame, so all the different teams, some Big Ten, certainly some Pac-12. And then me with the SEC, obviously, every single week. Like, I'm going to have a different opinion on a Mason Smith, mm-hmm. because I've watched him a lot more than maybe other people have, and people who are Big 12 people, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so, just because you looked at a board and it said this is where they should have been drafted, mm-hmm. versus this is where they were drafted, you have to understand there's so much more that goes into it. And these scouts and these coaches talk to a ton of people surrounding each player. And they obviously, in that building at Everbank Stadium, they believe in the guys that they drafted.
Mm-hmm.
We just now have to wait and see if that actually pans out.
Yeah, I mean, and every team goes through that. That's why we, every year we go through these things and we talk about, you know, yesterday, the one that people keep shouting is like a Puka Nacua, and how you find people. There's been teams that are able to find these guys, and it happens every single year. I actually just saw an article earlier about how the draft where Debo Samuel went, there was a group of wide receivers that all went in the second round that have been like the best in the league, and they were all second round guys. And then now you're looking at the wide receivers that went in the second round this year, with obviously like a Keon Coleman and an A.D. Mitchell and those guys. And they're like, is there the potential for those guys to be the top wide receivers in the league? And you can't deny that there's always those chances, because there's so many factors that go into not only these players making that transformation into the NFL, but in addition, what teams are they going to? How ready are these teams for them to start competing on what high level? The development, because we've also seen times here where there's been probably pretty decent players that have been here, but they just weren't being able to be developed properly. And then when they go to that next team, you start seeing them succeed, and you're kind of like, wait, what the heck? Why couldn't we do that? And there's so many factors that come into it. It's not just like you draft them, they're great, and you move on. There's a lot of process that goes into once you draft a player and what happens after that.
So two of those players, as I look through the list quickly, DK Metcalf, mm-hmm. and ahead of him, A.J. Brown.
Yes, A.J. Brown, Debo, and DK.
Yeah.
That's like, look at that second round of
pretty good ones too, like tight end Josh Oliver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. Hey, listen, he's tight end one in Minnesota until T.J. Hockenson comes back, so they paid him big money for that too. Speaking of big money, let's talk a little bit about this undrafted free agent class, because again, in case you're just joining us, of the 13 undrafted rookies that the Jaguars have agreed to free agent deals with, five of them are wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
You can read into that as we need to have plenty of people to throw to in camp. I would expect them to bring a quarterback in for a tryout as well, just to have somebody to throw to these wide receivers at rookie minicamp.
Mm-hmm.
You can say the same thing about DBs. We just need to have a lot of them in camp.
Yeah.
But it is fascinating that they invited five, or signed five, I should say, of the 13. The numbers are out for some of these undrafted free agent rookie deals, and I think it maybe gives a glimpse into where the Jaguars valued certain undrafted free agent rookies over others, and perhaps certain positions over others. I say that, and lest we forget, they gave Luke Barkou the most lucrative deal in undrafted free agent history once upon a time, made the team, but ultimately was not a mainstay here in Jacksonville. So Joshua Cephas, UTSA, is a name that I've seen plenty of you on the MyBookie Digital Studio text line, I've seen on YouTube chat line, excuse me, and on the text line asking about. So I've heard from multiple people that he's a guy many people anticipated being drafted. He got a $15,000 signing bonus from the Jaguars, $40,000 of his base salary guaranteed for $55,000 in total guarantees. Now, that sounds like a lot of money for an undrafted free agent. Get ready for these. Josh Proctor, Ohio State safety, another name that many people thought would get drafted over the weekend. $15,000 signing bonus, $200,000 in guaranteed salary total. And let's take it one step further. Andrew Parker, Gibby's buddy from App State, the linebacker, undrafted deal, over $200,000 in total guarantees. This is according to Aaron Wilson of KPRC. And that says to me that they maybe got into a bidding war for a safety and a linebacker, but it's fascinating knowing the depth they have at both positions, that they were both priority free agent signings, not the wide receiver who everyone's clamoring about.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, when we come back, Matt Moscona from ESPN Baton Rouge will join us on the three LSU players that are now Jaguars, as well as a whole lot more. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line. Helmets and Heels is switched on by
First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor on 1010XL.
Waiting for a train on us feeling near as faded as my jeans.
I don't want to say we spoke it into existence, ladies, but I think we manifested when we had this gentleman join us about a week and a half ago on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline that we would get to speak with him again just 2 weeks later because, the Jaguars went out, and maybe we should really be calling Baton Rouge.
No, he doesn't like that.
I know,
song.
Matt Moscona.
That's why we have this song.
I know, Matt Moscona doesn't like calling Baton Rouge, but he is kind enough to join us now on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline to discuss the not one, not two, but three LSU Tigers headed to Duval.
They did call Baton Rouge, though.
They did call Baton Rouge. Well said, Taylor. How are you, sir?
Ladies, I'm doing wonderful. And, yes, very apropos that I was on the show a couple of weeks back. And just for the record, I like calling Baton Rouge. It's just very cliche when I'm a guest on a show and everyone introduces me with calling Baton Rouge. That's all.
You also like push-ups, but we'll save that for the end of this interview.
Hey, I have to tell Brooks, I had to eat those words. I came on talking all kind of stuff, and then I slipped a disc in my back the next day.
Oh.
And I'm like, so Lauren, if we're gonna actually make good on the co push-up bet, I'm going to need a little time.
Well, you know, I decided I need time too, just because I want to do 50 straight, and I did a little practice round and I got to about 30 and I was dying. So
all of you on IR right now.
Yeah. Well, I'm healthy at least, but yeah. So absolutely. We'll schedule a time closer to football season, Matt.
Fair enough.
Let's not bury the lead. Brian Thomas Jr., Mason Smith, Jordan Jefferson, all on their way to Duval for rookie minicamp and to become members of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Matt, we really went in depth with you the last time you joined us on Brian Thomas Jr., and I think that pick, if it hasn't grown on Jaguar fans, it will. I think it was universally pretty accepted, and especially with the news today that Zay Jones has been released by the Jaguars, I think this is a natural succession plan. So let's instead start with those other two guys, because I had asked you about Jordan Jefferson, knowing that he could be a target for the Jaguars from my conversations with people in the building. Didn't expect them to double dip, though, along that defensive front.
Jordan Jefferson, I'm not sure if we talked about him when I was on a couple of weeks ago, but y'all, he was LSU's best defensive lineman last year. Not the most talented, but he was definitely the most productive and most consistent. And the thing that's, I would say, and I don't have a big sample, right? Jordan was just in Baton Rouge for 1 year. He went West Virginia, and then LSU was just so depleted on the defensive line, they had to get numbers. And so it wasn't really heralded when they got him. But he was the guy that, of the handful of defensive tackles they brought in the transfer portal, was the one that really emerged. The thing that stands out most about Jordan Jefferson is his strength and his hand placement. He benched 225 34 times, which I think was five more than the next closest defensive lineman at the combine. So you're getting a powerful dude on the interior. I don't know that you would say, oh, he's a day one starter, or, you know, he's a future all pro. But if you're looking for a guy that is going to give you strong reps with good technique and be part of a defensive line rotation, for a fourth round pick, like, that's a guy that's, candidly, I don't know everything about the Jags roster, but that's a guy I would be fall over stunned if he didn't make the roster and be part of a rotation.
And then Mason Smith, I really liked the pick because of how disruptive he can be in the middle. and he had the second most pressures in all the SEC last year. But overall, we know that he's a guy that came in highly recruited, highly heralded,
yeah.
And then obviously injury kind of took things off the rails a little bit, Matt. But Mason Smith, maybe also not a day one starter here because of the depth the Jaguars do have along that defensive front and bringing in Arik Armstead. But what do you think about him?
So Mason, and I've gotten to know Mason since he's been in Baton Rouge for 3 years, but I don't want to be the guy that comes on and just like sings the praises of everybody. So like, let me start with the negative with Mason before I go to the positive.
Okay.
The negative is, considering his physical ability, he never performed to that ability at LSU. And there's real questions about whether or not he ever will. That is the reason why he went at pick 48 and not the first defensive lineman off the board. Because physically, Mason Smith is the highest rated defensive lineman ever to come out of the Bayou region, which is a talent-rich part of our state. So, I mean, he was five-star, number one lineman, everything. As a freshman, was impactful. And guys, going into his sophomore year in fall camp, Mason Smith wasn't just the best defensive lineman or defensive player. He was the best player on the team. He was unblockable in fall camp. And that was a team that had Malik Nabers and Jade Daniels and Brian Thomas and all these players. And we all know the story, right? He tore his ACL on the first defensive series and then missed his entire sophomore year. People were excited for him to come back this season. And in fall camp, this is something I don't think many people talked about, but in fall camp, in an open scrimmage where the media was there, he suffered an ankle injury. And this season, I think the combination of maybe being tentative, coming off the ACL, being out of football shape, having not played for a year, the ankle injury, like all of that, I think was probably a combination of why the production maybe wasn't there this year. But if Jacksonville gets maximum Mason Smith, you're talking about a guy that has the potential, okay, like the physical ability to be an all-pro defensive lineman. I mean, he is physically that gifted, which is why Jacksonville, despite not having a lot of production on field, was willing to take him with the 48th pick. So that is a major boom potential pick with Mason Smith if the light bulb comes on and he figures it out.
Yep. Oh, go ahead. I want to take a little zoom out, Matt, because I think a lot of people, when they are looking at these two picks and maybe the ones that are critiquing it, when it comes to the talent that was on LSU's defense, there's no denying that there were guys that were up there that were able to, you know, actually produce and make things happen on the defensive front, especially. But I think that when people are concerned a little bit, and this is my question for you, is more of the issues as when it was coming to coaching and some of the things that were falling around, because I've heard a lot of stories about, you know, they had to bring in Peter Jenkins to kind of come help at a certain point because things were just not getting to the level that they felt like they should be in. So I think some people may have concerns with just the developmental factor and how maybe if they're a little far behind heading into the NFL. What are your thoughts on that?
So here's the other part that I should have mentioned about Mason. In his time at LSU, he had six different defensive line coaches for a variety of reasons.
Like he brought that up to us, by the way, Matt, in the call with him on Friday.
Mason did, yeah. That like when he signed with LSU, Ed Ogeron was still the coach. His defensive line coach was Jamar Cain, who's now with the Denver Broncos. They brought in a new defensive line coach for that spring, and then hired Jimmy Lindsay, who had a medical episode right before fall camp last year. So they moved John Jancic to defensive line coach. And when John was, who had never coached defensive line before, then they brought in Pete Jenkins sort of to supplement it, to help that. So, I mean, it's very, very difficult to develop consistently when you have five or six different voices, mm-hmm. Trying to coach at your position. The other thing, guys, we haven't talked about is y'all have Matt House there now in Jacksonville. And Matt House was LSU's defensive coordinator this past year, and that was a disaster. I mean, it was quite literally the worst LSU defense in the history of the program. Now, I think Matt is a really good defensive coach. I think as a linebackers coach in the NFL, he's going to be fantastic. I mean, he was that with the Chiefs, which is why ultimately I think he got the LSU job. But there was another thing, guys, like it became a big story here around the bowl game where like there were players who, wouldn't there was a video after the bowl game of some players when Matt House was going to kind of dap him up a little bit after the bowl game, they just sort of like gave him the cold shoulder. I just don't think, look, guys, just the, I'm not close enough to it to know, you know, in the locker room, but the vibes were terrible in LSU's defense last year. So you have to kind of look at the collective and pull back and say, that was so bad. Let me zoom in on the individual and the talent skill set and see if it fits what the Jacksonville Jaguars need, and not look at it in the context of LSU's defense, which top to bottom last year was just was literally the worst in LSU history.
You can find him on X at Matt Moscona, of course, one of the hosts.
Oh, we're going X? Oh, I still do Twitter.
You do Twitter? Okay, we'll call it Twitter. Mike Dempsey got into an argument with a listener the other day about it, so I that's why I'm saying X, even though our live stream, I haven't actually updated the graphic yet, which, as I noted 2 weeks ago when you joined us, Matt, thank you again for all of your help in expanding our multimedia development or department, excuse me, here at 1010 and all the plans that we have in the coming months. So also a plug for that for the folks at home. Let's stay on that Matt House point, though, because I have seen the memes. I have seen the GIFs that LSU fans have posted, that Jaguar fans have posted, of Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson show up day one and they see Matt House from across the field and they give him the side eye. I don't know how either of those two gentlemen feel, aside from what they told us in post-draft Zoom calls on Friday and Saturday, in which they said, oh, Matt's my guy. I love Matt. He's great. Like, I'm so excited to reunite with him. I also can't help but shake that because Ryan Nielsen is the protege of Ed Orgeron, from what I've been told, largely, Ryan Nielsen looked at the talent, the five-star potential of a Mason Smith, looked at Jordan Jefferson, what he was able to do after he left West Virginia, got to Baton Rouge, and said, oh, I can coach these guys up. Do you have any intel as to Ryan's connection to those guys?
Well, Ryan, I'm sure, is familiar with Mason. I don't know his familiarity potentially with Jordan. So Ryan was defensive line coach and then co-defense coordinator with the Saints. And Ed Orgeron actually tried to hire Ryan Nielsen to be the LSU defensive coordinator in 2021. Long story short is ultimately that got nixed by the Saints. And now Ryan Nielsen obviously is with you guys down there. Very, very respected mind, but his connection with Ed Orgeron, and obviously having been in New Orleans whenever Mason Smith was coming up, like he was in the Bayou region, which is just south of New Orleans, I have no doubt that Ryan Nielsen is very aware of who Mason Smith is and has been aware. I mean, he was one of those prospects that, like, everyone in this state knew who he was when he was a sophomore. And so I'll draw the comparison. It was like when Leonard Fournette was a starting running back at St. Aug as a freshman and an eighth grader, and everybody knew him all the way throughout his recruitment. Mason Smith was the same way here. So I have no doubt that Ryan Nielsen is very aware of the player, the talent, the technique, all of that stuff. Like, I would be stunned if that wasn't part of the decision-making process there.
Matt, as far as the draft is concerned, so Thursday night, Brian Thomas Jr., the Jags are on the clock at 17. They trade back to 23. They're still able to get a guy who they said they would have picked at 17. Where would you have drafted him if you were in that place? Would you have been comfortable with 17, even a little bit higher? Was 23 a good value for you as you watched it all unfold?
Oh, God. I thought Jacksonville nailed it. I mean, I look at Jacksonville, again, from afar, you all cover the team way closer. I mean, you cover the team. I just watch from a distance. I look at Trevor Lawrence with that type of quarterback, and obviously you get a game breaker like Brian Thomas. I mean, he feels like the type of weapon that would replace Calvin Ridley. So, I mean, to be able to get assets, trade back, and still get that player was incredible. And maybe, like, I heard some of the whispers last week that, you know, about Brian's labrum, and maybe that was part of the reason why he dropped a little bit on some people's boards. If that's the truth, then, I mean, that's just a major win for Jacksonville to be able to get assets and still get the player that you wanted. Like, make no mistake, y'all, Brian Thomas is going to be a great pro. If he stays healthy, I mean, that's obviously the wild card with any draft pick, but that's a guy that you're never going to have to worry about character issues. You're never going to have to worry about if he's going to go work hard. You're never going to have to worry about, like, any of the off-the-field stuff with Brian Thomas. Like, it's check, check, check with all of that stuff. And then you have this physical freak who's still coming into himself. Like, he's a team first guy. I mean, we talked about this when I was here a couple weeks ago. Like, Brian was the guy that wasn't, during his recruitment, he wasn't committing, decommitting, taking a bunch of visits, putting on hats. You know, like, he didn't play that game. He just, when he committed to LSU, he kind of like quietly committed and that was it. He's very much about business, doesn't need to be in the spotlight, but on the field, he plays large. Like, that is a, that's one of those low, like, you don't worry about the bottoming out of that pick. You just keep him healthy and let him go, let him go run a 4-4 and just torch people on go routes. And he's going to make a lot of plays. He's going to make Trevor Lawrence very happy having that weapon in that offense.
Matt Moscona is our guest on the All Pro Roofing Hotline. And before we let you go, sir, I need you to send a message to the haters. We have heard a lot over the last 72 hours from listeners, from Jaguar fans. If he was the number two wide receiver on LSU, how can you tell me he's going to be the number one receiver here in Jacksonville? Yesterday, I made the argument that you could say Justin Jefferson was the number two to Ja'Marr Chase once upon a time, and that worked out pretty well. What would your argument and your message be?
Well, the number one receiver was the sixth pick in the draft. I mean, they were both great, and they played different roles on the team in a great offense. But, like, the Justin Jefferson example is the best one. I mean, Ja'Marr had 1,700 yards that year, but Justin Jefferson had six touchdowns in the playoff semifinal game. I mean, Brian Thomas is every bit of number one. I know the argument as well. If people were paying attention to Malik, is that what Brian popped? Malik still had 1,500 receiving yards. Like, both those guys are awesome. Like, it's a weird thing about Louisiana, and both those guys are from the greater Baton Rouge area. Like, this state produces skill guys. We don't always produce offensive linemen. We don't always produce quarterbacks, but, like, cornerbacks, receivers, defensive linemen, they are aplenty in this state. So Odell, Jarvis, Jefferson, Chase, Malik, Brian Thomas, those are all dudes from the southern part of Louisiana. So, yes, you have a number one, you have an alpha. It was a great pick. And he went to an awesome situation with Doug Peterson. Obviously, he's familiar with the state of Louisiana, with Trevor Lawrence throwing him the ball. Like, that's anyone that's worried about him being the number two to Malik, that's laughable. Brian's going to have a great career. That was especially being able to get value with a 23 trading back was great work by the front office in Jacksonville.
I love it. You actually laughed. That's the best part. All right, so Matt, I didn't...
The point you made is perfect. Like, there was Ja'Marr Chase and Jordan Jefferson. Like, there can be two great receivers on a team.
Yes, there certainly can be. I didn't realize, by the way, when I picked Janis Joplin's Me and Bobby McGee, that the busted flat in Baton Rouge, how the song starts, that is you right now with your back. So I apologize.
I do love Bobby McGee, though, too. I wasn't even thinking about that, but I do. I'm actually sitting here in LaGuardia waiting for a flight home to Baton Rouge. So I'll be calling Baton Rouge myself soon.
All right. Sounds good. Well, we really appreciate you joining us once again.
My pleasure. Thanks, y'all.
All right. There he goes. Matt Moscona, ESPN Baton Rouge. We've got more to do here on Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels is switched on by
First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor on 1010 XL.
Have y'all heard this new song? It's by Sam Hunt called Outskirts.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I like this song.
So
it's already on the karaoke playlist in our household. So.
Love it.
Yes.
There's the one part of the song that if you've listened to it, you'll know. It got stuck in my head over the weekend. And I'm one of those people where until I hear the song the next time, like, it's literally stuck in my head. It can be 24 hours.
Yeah.
So usually I play the song. But, like, overnight it got in my head. And so it's the part where he goes, I wouldn't be living in this condo hanging out with Haley from Toronto. Literally over and over. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose my mind. Like, I love Sam Hunt and I like this song a lot, but I cannot get that song.
I want to know who Haley from Toronto is. I thought the Canadians were all nice. I'm just kidding.
I mean, I'm sure she is nice. He's just saying it's not, the love of his life who lived on the outskirts. All right, before we head to break once more, I want to recap a couple things that Matt Moscona from Baton Rouge, who does such a great job on ESPN, said. As far as Brian Thomas Jr., my takeaway that he will be a great pro. He's a physical freak, and he should replace Calvin Ridley. I think that's our expectations at this point in time. I think he could be even better than certainly Ridley was in this offense.
Well, I just said to you guys, better than Ridley. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. In our group media chat, I put a picture of Ridley and Brian Thomas, and I was like, can someone make a meme just saying upgrade? Like, that's literally what I put after we drafted.
Well, because he's exactly what Trevor had in college.
Yes.
I think that's the wild part for me. It took y'all year four to find a wide receiver that could mimic what Justin Ross and what T. Higgins were able to give Trevor Lawrence at Clemson. And, you know, and the hope is, again, like Matt said, if he stays healthy, if he's put in the right position. I found it interesting that Doug Peterson noted on Friday, I believe it was Friday, that he noted, or maybe it was Thursday night after Brian was drafted, he noted that, you know, he's going to run a couple different routes than what he ran in college, which was the other thing that I would have asked Matt. Maybe I'll text him after and we'll get that answer to you guys, because that's the knock on Brian Thomas Jr. is largely he only had to run 2 to 3 routes. What's the line that Joe Burrow has? Screw it. Jamar's down there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Largely, Brian Thomas Jr. was able to do that. And certainly there was some underneath stuff as well. But the fact that Doug Peterson brought that unsolicited into the conversation says to me that they understand it's probably not going to just click right away, and that's nothing against Brian Thomas Jr. It's just that they're going to give him a little bit more on his plate than perhaps what he had in Baton Rouge, which brings me to the point I made to you guys in the break. I love that the discourse online and in our MyBookie Digital Studio chat line has shifted from, if he's a number two at LSU, how can he be a number one here, to, oh my goodness, I just watched LSU tape and Jaden Daniels stinks. And therefore, God bless BTJ, God bless Malik Nabers, because how the heck were they thriving the way they were last year with a Heisman Trophy winner throwing to them?
You watched Jaden Daniels play football, play quarterback, and you thought he was terrible?
Yeah, that's like, weird to me too.
I mean, come on,
man. I think it's the elbow. I know.
It is weird. I mean, it looks weird, but there were moments last year when you go back and watch film, and this is one of the things that honestly stuck out to me in a positive way with Brian Thomas, was because there were moments where Jaden's passes were so on point that, like, in stride, full speed, Brian Thomas was having to get these things and just keep going, and there was, like, no room for error. Not the slightest bit of error, because Jaden was dropping it right where it needed to go. Were there moments of ups and downs? Yes, you see that of every college quarterback. But for me, there were a lot of moments where I was like, not every wide receiver can make those catches when they're in stride the way that he had to be because of the placement that Jaden Daniels had in certain situations.
Yes, exactly. Like I said, sometimes people don't actually watch the football games. They just like to go off of narratives, mm-hmm. and that's what we're here to attack, basically, throughout the show. We'll talk also about Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson, what Matt had to say in the other segment, as well as get to our Heels highlights on the other side. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 10 to Nexon on 82.5 FM.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels,
illuminated by
First Coast Lighting and Fans
on 1010 XL.
I like my water with lemon and lime. That's cause they're better combined. Kinda like us, you and I. If you were fruit, you'd be fine.
All right, whose song is this?
This one is mine.
Who is this? I like it.
His name is, it's just Nick N-I-C, okay, is what he goes by, but this song's called Fine Apple. He is like, I like it. It's very like vibey, fun yeah. music, and almost all his songs are like this.
It
like,
kind of reminds me of Nico Moon.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
the
yeah.
Nick Nico, that's kind of funny. We just talked to Matt Moscona, who has covered LSU for a long time, and he has great insight. We just talked about what he said about Brian Thomas Jr. A couple more guys, Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson. For me, when he said about Mason Smith, he was the best player on LSU's team going into his sophomore year. That stands out because you're mm-hmm. talking about Jaden Daniels, and you're talking about Brian Thomas Jr., and you're talking about Malik Nabers and multiple guys. Patrick Queen, I think, was still on the team at that point in time. Either way, you've got a lot of talent on that LSU roster. He said he was unblockable, and then, of course, he tore the ACL. Then he also had an ankle injury, which most people don't remember.
Part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so he said he has the potential to be an all-pro defensive lineman. If he turns out to be that, this defense is going to be cooking.
Yeah, and the fact that Doug Peterson, again, another unsolicited comment, was when he referenced the ceiling is Chris Jones. Mm-hmm. Chris Jones went in the second round to the Kansas City Chiefs once upon a time, and many people questioned his consistency. He didn't have the injuries that Mason Smith had in his college career, but he was certainly questioned, and there's a reason he fell to the second round. And yes, I hear plenty of you driving around in your car right now saying, yeah, well, that wasn't a reach, though. This is a reach. I sat in this very studio 2 years ago this September, and I was told that Mason Smith could be the best defensive player in college football, that he could be a top 10 draft pick in 2 years' time. I understand he tore his ACL. I understand he tore his meniscus. Thousands of NFL draft prospects who have gone on to very profitable NFL careers have done that. What changed? Mm-hmm. I just want to know what changed, because many other guys, they tear their ACL, Taylor, and it's okay, it's all right, it's just an ACL. It's kind of like Tommy John these days with baseball. They'll bounce right back. And he self-admitted, not just on Friday night when we had him on the Zoom, but throughout the course of the draft process has said he didn't feel like himself mm-hmm. until November, which is normal.
Yeah.
But that's where I just don't understand this idea of how you could go from being undoubtedly a top 10 pick to now it's a reach at 48.
Yeah, I mean, I think we see every year player, like we'll talk about players and 2 years later, they're not getting drafted where they are. But I think to Matt's point, Matt Moscona, what he just said too, was he never reached the level that people thought he could reach. And that's, if he can reach that level, he can be one of the best. So that is probably people's concerns, because you have everything. You have the tools, you have the traits, you have the size and all of it. And then that's why I kind of asked that question about the coaching, because it's more so in my mind. And when I mentioned yesterday why I didn't love it, it was more so I feel like he got hindered developmentally. So it's going to take a little longer for him to even get to the level we want him to be. If he can reach that, fantastic. I think he will be a great player. But I think that's a lot of people's concerns. And like Matt just said, when you have all of the tools and you see the season and the ability he had his sophomore year, and then it never really reaches beyond that point, he kind of hits a wall at that level. And yes, injuries were involved, which some people do get concerned about that, because it was the ACL and then an ankle right when he started feeling a little bit better. So I think that's more so people's concern, is just like, okay, we took this guy at 2, and yes, his ceiling could be really high, but he's also kind of, he hit a stump when it came to being the player that he was supposed to be in college. And that scares people a little bit.
And the good news is you have Arik Armstead,
right,
and he is older. So this is, part of it is for this season, and part of it is obviously also building for the future.
I asked Lauren this on break, because is there any concern to you? Because Matt just also talked about this, and this is something that we've heard little glimpses of too with the Matt House thing. Because at first, a lot of people were like, this is kind of good. Like, it's a familiar face, someone he worked with on the defense, and obviously other players now too, two of the guys on the line working together. But it kind of seems like players didn't really love him, and the LSU fans definitely didn't really like him. Is there any concern for you and that aspect?
All I can tell you, because we thought the same thing when Mason Smith was selected, and mm-hmm. we asked him about Matt House on Friday. RJ, maybe you can find that sound. I can look up what number it is on our sheet. But I was pleasantly surprised, because Mason Smith said, that's my guy. Like, I'm excited to be back with him. And that's when he brought up, mm-hmm. unsolicited, brought up the fact that he had 6 defensive line coaches in 3 years, and this will be the first time that there is a carryover from 1 year to the next. And obviously Matt House won't be the defensive line coach. That's Jeremy Garrett, formerly of Auburn. But the fact that there are familiar faces, the fact that there is consistency, he hasn't had that. And so that's where I think that's where you do say we are banking on coaching.
Yeah.
And as far as Matt House goes and the success he could have in Jacksonville, look, I understand LSU had the worst defense in their history, and the last 2 seasons were not what Tiger fans were hoping for. But I also cannot get away from the fact that he was a linebackers coach at Kentucky, and helped a guy we're all familiar with, Josh Allen, to the Nagurski Award, a former mm-hmm. 2-star recruit, then went to Kansas City and was a linebacker coach for a Super Bowl team, helped develop Willie Gay and several of those other linebackers out in KC. And therefore, because of these 2 years in Baton Rouge, where maybe like he could be a good coach and just not a good coordinator. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe it's happening on the other side of the ball here.
Yeah.
You know, like that
which
happens.
I think is what we have to hope for. Because if you're telling me that these players, when you have a Jordan Jefferson and you have a Mason Smith, who he's speaking very highly of, and the guy named Makai Wengo, who also he dropped a little bit, but was talked very highly of, you have those 3 guys on your defensive line and it looked the way it is. It's a little concerning to me, but I guess you got to hope, because it's the same offensively. There's a lot of times where you have that OC who just can't call plays. Like he can't do all of it. And so you're like, okay, well, you're really good when you had to do this one thing, but when you're opened up to all of it. But that's what, it just stuck out to me, because it kind of seemed like it didn't seem like the players loved him.
Well, and it, to me, his point, and what I told you in the break, this is Ryan Nielsen's defense. So while Matt House is a part of it, Ryan Nielsen is highly thought of as far as defensive coordinators are concerned, even though, yes, he only had the 1 year in Atlanta prior to now coming here. But people who know football, especially know defense, tell you that he is going to be a superstar mm-hmm. in this league. And we all know Ed Orgeron was really good at recruiting. Look at the national championship team as proof. And also he was really good defensively. And he's the one who recruited Mason Smith. He did not recruit Jordan Jefferson, but he's the one who recruited Mason Smith. And he's the one who taught Ryan Nielsen a lot when it comes to that side of the football.
Let's hear from Mason Smith and the exact quote regarding his former defense coordinator, now the linebackers coach here in Jacksonville.
That relationship has always been great. He's always believed in me. I always had the confidence in me. you know, he even used to take me out of practice when I was disrupting the practice in the office, couldn't get anything going, man. And, you know, we always had, like I said, man, the thing for me always been about somebody being real. And, you know, he's always kept it real with me. And, you know, I love to have him in my corner again, and I'm grateful for it. I'm probably going to get on the phone with him after this, because that's my guy, man. His family, his whole family, his sons, his daughter, Miss Jess, they just always allowed me and showed me open arms when I came to their home, and everything, man. So it's just great to have those familiar faces, and I'm ready to get to work.
That doesn't sound like a guy who's holding a grudge.
No, doesn't sound like it at all. You wouldn't be calling him right after you were drafted. And I always listen for speech patterns, too, when people answer questions. And if there's a lot of, well, you know, that kind of language in there, or pauses before they talk, mm-hmm. they hesitate, then I immediately think they're hiding something. Mm-hmm. That did not sound like that at all. Here's a guy who, again, he said this was the greatest day of his life to this point. And I thought,
well, I'm sure he just went in the second round and you're going to be happy.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, I think this defense has the chance to be special if Ryan Nielsen can make the pieces that are here now come to life the way that we think he can.
Before we get to our heels highlights, I want to get to a couple off the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Our friend in Indiana says, what changed? Smith had an underwhelming year production-wise. Had he rebounded and there weren't questions about his work ethic, a great pick. As is, we just took a major gamble when the opportunity cost was a likely solid starter. The top drafting teams realize round two and are about choosing solid starters. Bulky continues to choose projects and gamble, to which I don't want to pull up another soundbite because I know we got to keep the show moving, but Mason Smith addressed those reports that his work ethic was questioned during the draft process, mm-hmm. and he spoke of how that has put an even bigger chip on his mm-hmm. shoulder because he knows it's not to be true. He straight up said, I work my bleep off in the Zoom interview with us on Friday, and you look at the reports that came out about Adonai Mitchell and surrounding his maturity. And Chris Ballard, the GM of the Colts, gets on the mic and just cusses up a blue streak because he says, where are these unnamed sources coming from? And I would think that if there were questions about Mason Smith's commitment and his work ethic, I would think Ryan Nielsen and Matt House, two guys who've been around him for so long, would know those red flags. So that's part one. And part two, and I think this is an important point to make, despite the fact that I am not a doctor, I defer to Dr. George Barry and company when it comes to specific diagnoses, but I think it's important to note, and I've covered, you know, football now for almost 10 years professionally and in college, and I also played soccer, as did you, Lauren, and saw many a friend have an ACL tear right in front of my own eyes. It typically takes over a year, despite being cleared 7 to 9 months after the tear, to get back to full strength. I've witnessed it myself. We saw it with Cam Robinson when he came back in 2019. Really wasn't his full self until 2020. And not to mention, as 662 on the text line points out, have these haters never heard of Derwin James? Didn't do a thing at FSU due to injuries, became an NFL first rounder and a Pro Bowler.
And that's the thing, is people, again, I mentioned it yesterday, there are people in the camp of anything Balky does, they're going to be completely critical of because right. they don't like him. Look, I'm fine with people pushing back against certain picks. It's just when you look at the whole draft class and say, it can't be good because it has Balky's stamp on it, well, that's where I'm going to disagree, because I believe he has made some good draft picks. And again, we go back to last year's Tank Bigsby and Britton Strange, and they didn't do anything. But their careers are not over. I understand being critical of it. Yes, you should have probably made other picks with those two picks last year. You should have picked different players. But for the here and now, we can't evaluate them and their entire careers when they've only played one season here. Finally, by the way, on Jordan Jefferson, he said he was LSU's. This is Matt Moscona again. He said LSU's best defensive lineman last year. Where they got Jordan Jefferson, I'm totally fine with that pick. And benching 225 pounds 34 times, that yeah. does go to show you how strong he is. All right, Mia mentioned it. It is time for our heels highlights.
Tony Khan takes a beating during PEW Dynamite.
We can only assume that's what that handshake, that embrace meant.
Absolutely. Tony smiled.
Oh, my God!
What the?
What? No, no!
What the?
No, 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 not this, no. Oh, my God!
Nikki Jackson! Jacksonville, we love you so much!
Jack Caglione sends one to the moon for a grand slam against Arkansas.
Caglione. Sox one in the air to center field. It starts to carry. Holt looks up, and that's a grand slam. Four will score on home run number 26 for Caglione. Arkansas had to pitch to him, and he made the Razorbacks pay, and he blows this game open in the fourth inning. What an effortless swing, Troy. It looked like he almost one-handed that one up and out.
Christopher Morel hits a two-run jack to give the Cubs a 3-1 lead on the Mets with two outs in the top of the ninth.
High fly ball left field. Well struck. And forget out of here. Christopher Morel and no doubter to left.
Tibby torn and I'm a walking.
So I had only watched the video on mute of the Tony Khan incident there at AEW. The actual live play-by-play commentary is fantastic.
Oh, yeah. So I hadn't listened to the live version. If anything, as Taylor knows, I was sitting in our office, and I'm trying to find when did Shad show up on stage. Like, if there's a listener, a Heligan out there that can send it to us, 641-1010 is the number to reach us at, or the MyBookie Digital Studio chat line, because I was scrolling, and I'm like, where's Shad? Like, where is that memeable moment?
I actually think I have a friend who put it on a Snapchat, so I'll work on that.
Okay, because I was looking like at the actual broadcast, like the clip of it, and I don't, maybe conspiracy theory that they removed that part of it off YouTube. But yes, shout out to Tony, man, friend of the program, friend of 1010. Gutted it out draft week, went on the NFL Network, told everyone what a struggle it's been. And listen, it's
the drama is real.
AEW, WWE, pro wrestling in general, as Tony once said on 1010's air, I am a fringe wrestling fan by proxy of having friends that work in the field. It's fascinating. It truly is. As someone who didn't grow up watching it, and hopefully some of our Heligans listening right now are AEW and WWE fans, and you're loving this conversation, the fact that we are talking about pro wrestling at 1:16 on a Tuesday afternoon on 1010XL 92.5 FM. It's just an art form that, you know, I'm grateful to be on the fringe of.
What's the next step for Tony Khan and AEW?
So I thought, and I actually was texting with some people. I don't know. John O'Leary's in the office. He probably could speak to the studio at 1010XL headquarters. He could probably speak to it better than most. Or RJ, actually. RJ's on the mic. RJ follows pro wrestling. I assumed as I was leaving the Miller Electric Center around 8 o'clock on Saturday that I would see Tony scurrying with his neck brace to the AEW set at Daly's Place because there was a live show going on. I did not see him. I don't think he made an appearance. He did have to sign a couple undrafted free agents. So
he had a job.
I know he had that job. That he was. Listen, he's a very busy man, but I don't think he didn't make an appearance Saturday. Oh, he did show up Saturday. Both. Oh my God! Okay. So you guys, this isn't good radio, but I'm gonna relay what John O'Leary just said to us, our intern videographer engineer extraordinaire. Apparently, there's an NFL Films documentary being made about Tony Khan, and therefore he did go back and forth between the two. And so, listen, the man's the busiest man in sports. So, I'm happy that he's getting his due and his play, even if I know he was in character when he was on NFL Network on Friday, but I had more than one friend text me and be like, he's talking about Harvey Weinstein on NFL Network, and I'm not really sure how I should feel about this. And I was just like, listen, let the man live. It's all part of the bit and a part of being in character. You know, we had Timeless Tony Storm with us, and hey, we didn't know. Is she in character when they come in studio? It's you know, and it's a lifestyle. Yeah. So I ain't gonna hate on it.
I don't know what, as far as Tony's role will be moving forward in the theatrics of all of it, but I do know that AEW Dynamite Rampage in Winnipeg comes up this Wednesday night, May 1st at 6:30 Central Time. So I guess that's 7:30 Eastern. So if you want to pay attention to that and see if Tony shows up, we will find out. All right, Taylor, your highlight, Cubs baseball.
Yes.
No surprise there.
Of course. Yeah. So we were playing the Mets last night, getting no hit through eight. Dansby Swanson comes up, breaks up the no hit. Christopher Morel comes up at the top of the ninth with two outs. and hits a 2-run bomb. We go up 3-1, end up beating the Mets. So Dan Hicken was not happy with me this morning, but it's fine. We'll take the W. He was like, what win was that for you? I was like, 18. He was like, what's your record? I was like, 18-11. He's like, what? You guys are 18-11? That's so annoying. I was like, excuse me.
What does that have to do with anything?
I feel like people didn't realize the Cubs were playing like actually pretty good.
Okay.
Everybody's hurt right now too, and they are still managing it, other than the 17-0 loss they had against the Red Sox. That one we'll just erase. But aside from that, so he, and I don't know, for whatever reason, he doesn't like Dansby, obviously, because of like the when he was on the Braves. And then for some reason, they like the Cubs to lose, so they have a little thing about it. But
I get it. Sometimes, too, when you know people are such big fans of their teams, you eventually start to
root against
them.
Yeah, I know.
And the Mets right now are just at 500 at 14 and all.
That's why I root against the Gators, because all of you guys.
See, I think I get sucked in because of all the guys around here. I think if it was just me as a Florida fan, nobody would dislike Florida. But because there's so many of us, and yes, there's a lot of guys who are very obnoxious, then I get sucked in, but it's fine. Mine was having to do with the alma mater. Florida's Jack Caglione just continues to impress everyone around the college baseball world, and people who even don't follow college baseball, I think, are aware that Charlie Condren at Georgia and Jack Caglione are kind of neck and neck as far as home runs are concerned. But Cags also is a pitcher, and he's 5-0 on the mound this season. So he's not just hitting super well, but he hit his 26th home run, which was good for a grand slam. And that was super fun. That was the only game, though, that Florida beat Arkansas this past weekend. So Florida lost 2 out of 3 to the second-ranked team in all of the nation. And so Florida back at it later today at 4 o'clock, first pitch against FAU. So Florida can potentially win that game. We'll see. It's a midweek game, so you never know when it has to do with that. As far as the other thing we didn't get to talk to Matt Moscona about, LSU gymnastics won the national championship.
Oh there it is.
And I don't know
that
he follows it that closely by any means, but I mean, certainly there are some LSU fans who are aware that Dede Brough was the gymnastics coach there for like 50 years, and she never won a national title. And so for LSU, she retires, and a couple of years later, LSU wins. And it would be that way to me if, obviously, FSU baseball under Link Jarrett, if they were to win a national championship when Mike Martin, senior 11, couldn't do it, that would be such redemption for that program. All right, we've got more to do, more Jaguars football to talk about. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels.
This hour is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers.
Light up your lunch with Helmets and Heels.
Presented by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
On 1010XL.
Taylor Dahl, Mia O'Brien, RJ Saunders, I'm Lauren Brooks. Hanging out with you on this fine Tuesday afternoon. Riley Green, by the way, also hanging out with us, according to this song. The Rays were playing the Angels last weekend, and the Angels have a player named Riley Green. And so every time he came up to bat, I was singing a Riley Green song. And by the way, he did really well against the Rays, so that was fun.
Donna Murphy texted me and said, is there only country music on your guys' show now? And I was
no.
But Nick sometimes, it was right before that. And she literally was like, this is better. But I was like, no, it's just a playlist of, and he just picks randomly. So some days it's all Mia songs. Some days it ends up being a lot of Lauren. Sometimes it's a lot of me. It's just
today
random.
The show led, if you miss it, when we had Matt Moscona on, it led with Me and Bobby McGee by Janis Joplin.
Yeah.
So that is definitely not country. That's 70s. Mm-hmm. All right, let's look at The Athletic and Dane Brugler's way too early NFL mock draft for 2025. Mia, I was not surprised to see that the first player picked overall came from the University of Georgia. What surprised me is that it was not quarterback Carson Beck.
Yeah, and what surprised me, not to bury the lead, Lauren, is that Carson goes second overall behind a defensive lineman who is his teammate in Michael Williams, and he goes second overall in Dane Brugler's way too early mock draft for 2025 to the Tennessee Titans.
Hell yeah.
And the opening.
That's actually good and bad. Bad because Carson Beck's going to be really good in the NFL, but that's good in my opinion because that means this year the Titans are terrible.
Right. And the opening.
Realized they drafted the wrong quarterback.
Exactly. His opening line.
Realized a long time ago.
His opening line is if the Titans are drafting this high next April, the organization might be reexamining its quarterback situation. Yes, if you're picking number 2 overall, I would definitely think so. But yes, a local tie in the Mandarin High School product. Now, of course, the quarterback of the University of Georgia who did go back for a fifth season and will be starting for the Dogs to begin their
will be starting for the Dogs for a second straight season. He goes number two overall in Dame Brugler. Wow, words are hard. I'm blaming my eating lunch during the break. In Dame Brugler's way too early 2025 mock draft. Michael Williams goes first overall. And Lauren, I'm not as familiar with him. I know, obviously, yet another highly touted recruit in the Georgia defensive line factory, because that's literally what it is at this point. But curious, this is the first mock draft I've seen that wouldn't have a quarterback or Carson Beck being that specific quarterback going number one overall.
Yeah, so I think the way Dane Brugler is going about it is because he actually has no idea which teams really will be picking where they are going to select, I think he's doing this a little bit more of his top 50 prospects kind of thing, so basically his top 32 prospects. I think he's basically telling the world that this guy, Michael Williams, you need to watch out for when you watch Georgia football this season, and certainly the bowl game against FSU, you get to see him. I think he's doing that more than he's saying, like, who exactly is going to go first. Because, again, he doesn't know exactly which team is going to pick there. I could be wrong. Maybe Dane would at some point say that, no, this is exactly how we think it's going to go. But that's why I think it's called way too early.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that I have heard is that this next year's draft defensively is heavy as this year's draft was offensively. Mm-hmm. So they're almost expecting, like, a reverse next year of there's going to be a ton of defensive guys in the top 15, and then you'll have a couple offensive guys trickle in, and then from there you'll get more picks later. That's a lot of, and obviously we're a year away from it, so it's a while, but the early mock drafts, everything I've read, is next year is like very, very defensive heavy.
Because if you had asked us this time last year if the pick that the Carolina Panthers traded to the Chicago Bears
was one
would be the number one overall pick,
yeah,
for a second straight year, but by way of the Carolina Panthers, yeah, I don't think anybody would have believed you. And again, not to bury the lead, Dane Brugler has the Panthers selecting number one overall again in 2025.
I mean, it's hard to disagree with that in a sense. I've seen other mock drafts that have Shedeur Sanders, the quarterback,
yeah,
who plays for his father at Colorado, him going number one overall. In Dane Brugler's, he has him going 22nd overall, which I find interesting. He has him going to the Jets, so that's a guy going to a situation where Aaron Rodgers is already there, and they drafted Jordan Travis, yeah, in the fifth round. So I don't know that that would necessarily happen.
Yeah, and the one of the ones I saw for the way too early was on the 33rd team, and they have edge out of Tennessee, James Pierce Jr., going first to the Patriots. Mm. And then they have Shedeur Sanders going to the Giants at 2. And then they have Carson Beck in this one going to the Raiders at 7. But when you look at the order of this, they also have the Panthers picking third. They have the Broncos picking fourth, the Titans picking fifth. So, again, another guess of the Titans not playing well this year. Washington 6, Raiders 7, and then Arizona 8 picking an edge too. But it goes edge, quarterback, wide receiver, edge, cornerback, quarterback, edge.
Yeah, it's always hard to differentiate those quickly, corner and quarter. One guy we haven't talked about, Mia, Javon Foster, the Missouri offensive tackle, because I'm starting to think, all right, if we were sitting here right now, what would we be drafting as in, mm-hmm, the Jaguars? What would the Jaguars be drafting this time next year? And you think, okay, it could be offensive linemen, just because that position group seems to have guys that are, you know, eventually not going to be on this roster after this next year. Javon Foster started 39 games at left tackle, 2 at right tackle at Missouri, and certainly seems to bring some depth to that position group here, but I still could see an offensive tackle a year from now being drafted.
Yes, and we will have Alyssa Lang of the SEC Network joining us tomorrow, give us some more insight, because she called a lot of Mizzou games last year, and so she'll give us some more insight into Foster as a prospect. Self-admitted, it sounds like he will be their swing tackle. Certainly, he could impress to the point that with Cam Robinson and Walker Little in contract years, maybe you say he is the long-term solution at one, mm-hmm, of those two positions, most likely at right tackle, with Anton Harrison moving to left tackle, something that Trent Baalke hasn't dismissed as merely a rumor. And is there potential for that? Sure. But I do like the way Dane Brugler goes in this early top 25 mock draft, which is with the Jaguars selecting a corner with their first round pick. He has them selecting at 15. Obviously, we hope the Jaguars are picking in the 20s,
32nd.
If not 32nd overall.
He has them picking who?
Denzel Burke,
okay,
the corner out of Ohio State, who, as, yeah, he notes, would have been a top 50 pick this year, but opted to go back to Columbus alongside a lot of the other Buckeyes who feel like they have unfinished business and they need to take down the Michigan Wolverines,
yeah,
at long last after a 3-year drought. Plus,
the school up north.
Yes, the school up north. Sorry, Tim B, if you're listening, I don't want to offend you. But I think that the Burke pick here makes sense. And granted, this time last year, ironically, people were mocking Kamari Lassiter to the Jaguars because that third corner was a question mark last year. And now it's the cornerback position opposite Tyson Campbell. And that's assuming you re-signed Tyson Campbell as he enters a contract year. The more and more that I've thought about it and I've talked to people, truly, unlike the edge rusher position, which I know Frank Frangie went on at length yesterday, that is his biggest area of concern for this team. Mm-hmm. And we'll dive into that even more tomorrow. But he is most concerned about edge. I'm not as worried about edge as I was a year ago, just because I do believe that Travis Gibson can give you production when coached properly. Mm-hmm. This time last year, you were banking on Kalyvon Chaisson and his three career sacks and DeJuan Smoot coming off of a torn Achilles. Mm-hmm. So I feel better. And I also don't feel as panicked about that number two corner spot, because as long as Ronald Darby stays healthy, which is a big if, knowing his track record, but there is depth at that cornerback position. There is a lot of bodies, and I don't think that can be dismissed. Now, do you have that alpha, that number one, number two corner? I think you do in Tyson. Do you have the guy opposite him? There's a lot of teams in the National Football League that have a number one corner, and maybe the corner opposite them did not come by way of a first or a second round pick. Hell, Darius Williams was an undrafted free agent once upon a time before rising the ranks and starting opposite he who must not be named Jalen Ramsey in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think some people already, you mentioned Frank, he believes that Jarian Jones could potentially be playing outside and not necessarily nickel, even though, yes, Doug Peterson said he'll be nickel to start off with. So there's, like you said, there's a lot of people, there are a lot of guys in that cornerback room that are going to compete. And that's how, you know, you at least want to see it play out.
That's definitely going to be one of the interesting ones in camp, I think, because yesterday I was listening to the Frangie show and we were having a conversation before they went on, and he was saying similar. He could see, because he believes that they brought Darnell Savage here to play the nickel corner, and so he thinks that it may give Jarian Jones the opportunity to go outside, and that's where he thought. But then they had Prisco on, and Prisco was like, no, I don't think so. I think he's going to be inside. I don't think that's what kind of the plan. I think Darnell Savage is more of like a depth piece, which that'll all be interesting, because obviously, but you do have the bodies there to compete for a position. This is interesting, just real quick, because we were talking about the early mock drafts, but for the 33rd team one, they also have the Jags pick. They have them picking 16, but to no surprise, they're drafting an LSU player in this one, and it's offensive tackle Will Campbell.
Oh my goodness.
I can understand anytime they're going to mock the offensive lineman, but it's even funnier, that it's LSU, because there is that pipeline from Baton Rouge to Jacksonville.
Some other quick notes from Dane Brugler's way too early mock draft. Number one, Luther Burden, the star wide receiver out of Mizzou. He has him going 17th to the Los Angeles Rams. Mm-hmm. I think Luther Burden's going to end up a top 10 pick, so long as he continues the production he had this past season. I think he's the number one wide receiver off the board, and I think he does go top 10. Some other names of note, Shedeur Sanders, as we alluded to, goes 22nd to the New York Jets. Walter Nolan was the number one recruit in the class of 2022, started his career at A&M, is now at Ole Miss. He has him going 23rd overall to the Green Bay Packers. That'll be a curious name to monitor on the college football front, just because Ole Miss has become Transfer U. Shout out to Lane.
Yeah.
But can he carry over that production and get the coaching that, quite frankly, I'm not sure he got in College Station to take him to that next level? And finally, Patrick Payton, the Florida State edge opposite Jared Verse this past season, flirted with the portal, maybe, possibly.
There were rumors.
Yeah. According to Dane Brugler's projections, he will go 28th overall to the Buffalo Bills to reunite with Keon Coleman. And, of course, we know Buffalo, no stranger to taking an edge rusher in the first round.
No stranger at all. All right, we've got one segment to go here on Helmets and Heels on 10 to XL 92.5 FM.
This hour of Helmets and Heels is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers. Helmets and Heels is brightened by
First Coast Lighting and Fans
on 1010 XL.
Hi, Mia, you are wearing an Iceman hat.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor has been supporting the Iceman all season long and the playoffs, of course, as well. Do we smell a victory tonight, ladies?
I hope so. I mean, I was a little disappointed that they couldn't close out the series down on Estero. I don't know about you, Taylor.
But they wanted to do it in front of us.
Yes, right. Exactly.
in front of the loyal fans.
I've heard this a time or two, whether it's the NBA playoffs or the NHL playoffs, or even the World Series. Well, we wanted to do it in front of our home fans. Yeah,
that's not probably really accurate, but it gives them a little bit of the excuses to why they did
it. It definitely does have to be a little more fun at home. Like, you're in front of your fans. You're also home. So you're like, afterwards, you're not having to like get on a bus and drive home after just losing in a game. But you obviously want to do it in as little games as possible also. Like, everyone hopes for the sweep, because then you're in, you're out. You have more time in between that, especially for hockey players, because obviously it's a very aggressive game. These guys are probably at this point pretty banged up. But that's why, I mean, they do what they do. So it'll be fun, though. I hope they close it out tonight. I think they have the chance to. Aside from one game, it's been a very close, tight series, so I wouldn't be surprised if it went to another overtime or shootout, because that's just kind of what it's been.
The fact that they stole two of three on the road, yes, I think that bodes well for our Jacksonville Icemen tonight.
Yes. Yeah, have you ever heard Taylor's tooth story? Hockey player tooth story?
No, I didn't know about this.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Quick story. So the first year that they got the Iceman, I went to like every game. I was mega obsessed with the Iceman. I was there all the time. I became pretty good friends with some of the Icemen that were here at the time. And so there was one of the guys, Cameron Critchlow. He was like the original captain, one of the original captains. And so we were all out one day having a few drinks after one of the games. And he's telling some story. I can't even remember what he's talking about because I was distracted a little bit after he's telling the story. He's talking. I say something. I respond enough to where he laughs. And when he laughs, his teeth fall out. His teeth fall out.
Because he has a space. I knew from interviewing him when I was a news. So like, he's missing his two front teeth.
So he has one of the ones. It's just two teeth, but it slides in and it's just like a temporary. So during the games, he'll take it out, obviously. When he's out, he puts his teeth in. So the teeth fly out. Me, just being reactive as I am, former athlete, I guess.
You caught them.
Mid-air catches teeth, and I'm just sitting there, and the whole table of Icemen are just like, what just happened? And Cameron's like, thank you, and like grabs his teeth and puts them back in his mouth.
I literally am hoping and praying my mother is listening as a dentist right now during her lunch break.
It's one of my favorite stories.
That's incredible.
It was great.
Yeah. I love that story. Well, and I made you tell it or asked you to tell it because I think it brings the Icemen good luck.
Yes.
As the puck drops tonight at 7:00, I know people will certainly pack the arena and bring the good vibes. Jumbo Shrimp, by the way, back at home tonight. They went 4-2 against Memphis. First pitch tonight against Scranton, 7:05. I will be there tomorrow night because I love me some baseball.
Love that. Absolutely. Wilkes-Barre Yankees. Lauren, while we're on the subject of baseball, I have to ask, as the calendar gets ready to flip to it's going to be May, are you?
I don't know that reference.
It's NSYNC.
Oh,
yeah. Because they say it's going to be me, but the way he's saying it, they would always say
May. I was going to say, I know
it's going to be May.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Are you worried about Florida baseball?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. They have really one super talented player, and then they have a lot of guys that, as far as pitching is concerned, too. Then they have a lot of guys who they're not sure that they can get through three innings. So,
but you're confident they will be in the postseason field.
As of now, they are. So, yes, I am confident.
But
and they've had an incredibly difficult schedule. If you talk about Texas A&M and Tennessee and Arkansas, I mean, those are teams that are all ranked at the top of the D1 baseball rankings, and Florida has won some of those series, lost some of those series. So if you look at their resume, they're a team that deserves to be in the postseason, again, as of now. But like I said, they've got a midweek game tonight. Well, today, really. First pitch in Gainesville is at 4:00. Speaking of Florida baseball, FSU improved to 34-9 after taking 2 out of 3 at number 6 Duke over the weekend. Now FSU is ranked 7th in all of the land, according to D1 baseball rankings, and FSU is at number 20 NC State. Beginning Friday, first pitch, 6:00.
Two things. One, I love the thought of Florida having to go to Tallahassee for a regional.
You do, yeah.
Just because the content is endless, as much as Tallahassee is a little bit further of a drive for us. But number two, we've said it before, and I want to say it again, especially as we come out of NFL draft weekend, and the Florida State football team having, what was it, 11 players, 13 players that were selected or drafted? I know it was 6 in the top 100. Six players drafted in the top 100.
Yeah, Georgia had set the record, I want to say, with 15 the other year. And
yeah.
So Florida State,
I know, at the very least, the 6 in the top 100, I saw Jared Verse, Braden Fisk, and Jerrion Jones were tweeting about it. They're like, our social team's about to be busy.
That video between Verse and Fisk, when Braden gets the call from Los Angeles, the Rams, and then Verse comes in and gets
on the phone
with McVay, and McVay, by the way, it still seems so incredibly young to me.
Well, yeah. he does have a toddler now, so it still feels
he's
young.
A toddler.
He's just like, you know, almost 40 or past 40. But no.
Yeah, 10 players for FSU.
10 players. And, you know, they were referencing, that was the Rams social team that did a great job. But yes. The Florida State social team kept busy. Mike Norvell even, you know, was calling people out on Twitter about how, yeah, I am going to flaunt that I had 6 players drafted in the top 100. 5 of them by way of the portal, too.
Yeah.
Sure.
I am the portal master. And that's where, you know, to connect two things, that's where I look at where we were with Mike Norvell 2 to 3 years ago to the day, and where FSU baseball fans were with Link Jarrett a year ago today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in this day and age of college sports, we just want to get the hook out so early, whether it's a quarterback, whether it's a coach. If we don't get that instant success, we're over it.
Yeah.
Credit to the administration in Tallahassee, because they stuck by their guys and they are now reaping the benefits.
Yeah, I think if you were to talk to FSU fans, and I know a lot of them, they were much harsher critics of Mike Norvell because of the in-game moments that were happening, that they mm-hmm. didn't like his in-game decision making. When it came to Link Jarrett, they understood that the roster just needed to be completely overhauled.
Yeah.
And Link Jarrett pretty much did that a season ago, and they knew it was going to take a little bit of time, but they believed in him as being the right guy. Again, at least those are the FSU fans that I talked to, that they never wanted Link Jarrett to be fired. They definitely, at some points in time,
there was a fire in Mike Norvell Twitter spaces on the same day that Urban Meyer was fired. Never forget.
Yeah, I'm sure there were also a lot of FSU fans that knew they did need to be patient because of the disaster that was Willie Taggart and how much money FSU was paying him. And so if you're sometimes you have to go against the grain. And so for Florida fans, that as far as Billy Napier is concerned, the small minority that want Billy Napier to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I shouldn't say that. There's a lot of people
who think he can succeed.
Yeah, that actually think he will be successful. Mm-hmm. You have to go against the grain because of what you've seen so far is he hasn't been successful, and he hasn't been able to mine the portal the way that Norvell has and Cristobal has. And the in-game coaching decisions have also been questionable and things like that. Back to baseball. JU plays host to Bethune-Cookman tonight. First pitch is 7 o'clock. And UNF plays host to UCF tonight. First pitch, 6 o'clock.
And JU's in the driver's seat in the A-Sun
standings. JU's playing really well. Yeah.
So just real quick, because we got from the 240, he says, for the Seminoles, 10 drafted total, 3 undrafted. So 13 total on teams right now. I do want to ask you too, Lauren. 11 games, Jack needs 8 home runs to pass what he did last year. Is he doing it?
I think so.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I mean, the tricky part,
that's
though,
if they
Taylor,
pitched to him, Taylor.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
The tricky part is Arkansas intentionally walked him 4 times before they eventually had to pitch
to him.
That's
so frustrating.
Of course it is.
For him.
Especially when you're the only real, consistent source of offense.
Correct. Yeah. He's the guy that you know what you're going to get out of him almost every single time. And so, he needs to be pitched to. But if you're the other team, why would you pitch to him?
Yeah.
Because, other players have not been nearly as consistent. And to your point, Mia, JU right now, 15-6, leading the A-Sun as far as baseball standings are concerned. And, shout out once again to Chris Hayes and the boys there. I know they had a walk-off win on Saturday night. That was super cool against Queens. All right, that's going to do it for us. Of course, don't go anywhere. XL Primetime is coming up next. For me, O'Brien, for Taylor Dahl, for RJ Saunders, I'm Lauren Brooks. These heels are made for talking. We will talk to you tomorrow with Alyssa Lang at 12:15.